Hello, believers, non-believers, and everyone in between. You're listening to Stories with Sapphire. I am Sapphire Sandalo. Now get cozy and open your mind because it's story time. Welcome to the final episode of Season 7. If you're listening on Spotify, there is now a video component. It should automatically play for you within the app, so if you like to put a face to the voice, here I am. In this week's episode, we'll be exploring places where peculiar things have happened. First, I narrate the cautionary legend of a cursed temple in Greece. Then I speak with Olivia Noel, who recalls the time she lived in a neighborhood inhabited by a phantom little girl. And finally, Jim Harold of Jim Harold's Campfire shares one of his favorite stories ever told on his podcast. Chapter 1, The Cursed Ruins, submitted by Miriam. When I was little, my family would travel during the summer to visit my cousins in Greece. Our whole family still lives there, save my parents and grandparents, who moved to the States a while ago. We usually stay in my dad's parents' village, a small and isolated town deep in the northern mountains. It's a beautiful place, but super outdated, like majorly. The roads are unmarked and unpaved, and you'll be driving near the edge of cliffs with 100-foot drops at any given time. I was always uneasy driving down that road. One year when I was 15, we arrived at my cousin's house in the village. My parents got us out of school in June, a couple of days before summer release, so we could make it in time for my cousin Asmina's birthday. Asmina and I were best friends. We loved adventuring around the village, playing with the stray cats that roamed the streets, and looking for turtles that we'd find in the field. "I have something amazing to tell you," Asmina said excitedly once we'd settled in, "but you have to promise not to tell anyone." Hesitantly, I nodded. Asmina looked around carefully before leaning in close and said, "There's an ancient temple that an archaeologist team from Germany discovered this past winter. It's only 10 minutes away from here, and all the workers are gone for the summer. I've been waiting for you so we can go check it out together." An ancient temple did sound fun, and they weren't unusual. Thousand-year-old ruins or artifacts were unearthed all the time there. My dad used to tell us, in any country as old as Greece, you're bound to run into the past at some point or another. "Isn't it all fenced off?" I asked, knowing how most dig sites were usually closed to the public. Asmina waved a hand dismissively at that. "Please, those chain links are so flimsy. The temple is right below a cave entrance. We can just climb over the rocks and we're in." I frowned, knowing that if we were caught, we'd both be in huge trouble. Most of the ancient sites we'd explored before were open, and if they weren't, they were at least known to be visited under the table anyways. This sounded different, though. It sounded more important somehow. "I don't know," I said uneasily. "What if our parents found out? I'll be grounded forever." Asmina rolled her eyes, tugging at one of my braids playfully. "You're so timid, Maria. Honestly, no one will see. You know our parents. They chat over dinner for hours. They won't even notice us leave. And besides, we won't be gone for more than an hour." "Please?" I sighed, knowing that I might regret not taking this opportunity when fall rolled around and I'd be back in boring middle school. Still, a nagging feeling stayed in the back of my mind, almost like a sense of dread. The evening quickly approached, and when the sun was setting and our parents were at the patio dinner table talking, Asmina spoke up. "Mom, Maria and I are going to go look for our favorite cat now, you know, the brown one with the kittens. This is the only time she comes out." My auntie smiled at us, my own parents nodding in approval. "Just be safe, girls, and take your cell phones with you. Be back here by 9 p.m., understand?" We both agreed before dashing off into the mountains, me trying to keep up with Esmina, like always. She never failed to wait for me, though, and soon we were giggling like old times. My cousin was right. The temple was only a short walk away, but it somehow seemed much further than that. The path she took was barely recognizable in the thick brush, leading deeper and deeper into the mountain forest. Tall trees cast shadows in the setting sunlight, and the world seemed to have an ethereal glow about it. We finally came to a clearing of sorts, where the trees became more sparse and a mountainside jutted out of the ground, large stones and boulders bordering the rocky terrain. Then I saw it, the chain link fence. And behind that, the temple. It looked like most others I'd seen before. Tall columns left skeletal shells of their former glory, the walls having been worn away and crumbled over millennia to only bits and pieces that formed the outline of a structure. There was what looked to be a raised slab of rock in the middle of the columns, no doubt where the altar probably once stood. But what caught my eye immediately, and what made me shiver where I stood, was the statue. A woman's figure was sculpted on top of the altar. Only the torso and part of the arms remained. She was wearing a sash across one of her shoulders, but unlike the other maiden statues I'd seen, this sash was a sash of chains. Carved from stone with perfect detail, you could still see the manacles and the individual links crossing the woman's sleek torso and wrapping around her. It looked and felt wrong. Maybe it's a slave's quarters, I thought to myself, knowing that many temples used to have small rooms built in where the slaves who cleaned up and kept after the building would live. But I'd never seen an entire statue dedicated to one before. They say it was built to honor Hephaestus, the god of fire, Esmina murmured, staring at the statue. The temple used to be completely closed off to the public. Only the most holy priestesses and warriors would be allowed to enter. I wrung my hands together, unable to keep from noticing the sun getting lower and lower on the horizon. Maybe we should go, I said quietly. It's getting dark. Esmina didn't even hear me, though, as she was already climbing the large rocks that bordered the mouth of the cave, lifting herself over before jumping to the ground on the other side. She raised an eyebrow at me, smirking. Come on, cousin. We haven't even seen anything yet. I sighed, climbing the rough edge of the cave myself before joining her. The grass inside was tall and overgrown, weeds littering the site where parts of the temple's floor had been exposed from the archaeologists digging. I know it sounds stupid, but the moment I set foot in the temple, I felt like I set foot in some stranger's house, apprehensive and nervous, like someone might come in and find me, like someone was still living there. The boys in school say that this temple was destroyed on purpose after a ritual that went wrong, Esmina continued as we roamed around the ruins. Since Hephaestus was the god of fire, there was a flame in every one of his altars that always had to keep burning. Day and night, they'd have someone stoking the fire and fueling the flame. If it ever went out, it was a bad omen and a sign that the gods were angry. There's evidence scientists have uncovered of human sacrifices they used to perform in these desperate times. A woman would be chosen from the village. She had to be the most beautiful, the smartest, and the kindest, almost perfect in every way. Anything less was considered an insult to Hephaestus. Once they chose the woman, they would put her in the temple and burn her alive. The flames from her ashes would be used to set the new fire. Definitely disturbed, I swallowed thickly and glared at her. You're just trying to scare me. That's not true. I'm not kidding, Esmina said seriously. The priestesses thought that if they gave Hephaestus a new bride, he would return his favor to the village and all the bad luck would go away. But it's said that in this temple, that ritual went horribly wrong. One day, the flame in the altar went out. Soon after that, a terrible famine struck the village, and everyone was desperate to survive. In order to start the fire again, the holy men of the temple started their search for a woman. When they found someone they thought would do, it's said that she fled the scene, terrified, and wound up running to a villager's house to hide. When she knocked on the door, a man and his wife opened it. The husband wanted nothing to do with this, but his wife felt sorry for the girl and let her hide in their home. Well, when the priests finally tracked the girl down to the house she'd fled to, they demanded that she be returned to them. The wife was about to escort the girl out another way so she could flee into the wilderness. But the girl betrayed her and shoved the wife into the street in her place. "There she is," the villagers exclaimed, mistaking the wife for the girl. The woman tried to explain herself. Her husband ran to try and stop it, but it was too late. They took the woman into the altar and sacrificed her to the gods. It's said that because she died in such anguish, betrayed and furious, her spirit was rejected by Hephaestus, and she roams the earth now, burning any man alive who enters the temple alone with a woman, making sure that what happened to her would never happen to any woman again. I shivered, staring at the statue that seemed to haunt me now. Was that how the woman looked before her violent death? Chained and alone? I was never into the supernatural or believing in spirits, but after what happened next, I have never doubted them. A couple of years later, I was sitting at home doing my schoolwork when I got a text from Esmina. It was a link to a local village news article, and I tapped it open in curiosity. There, the headline read, "Suspect in woman's assault found dead in historical ruins." The story went on to report a man who was on the run with his ex-girlfriend, who he had kidnapped from her home and taken hostage. He parked his car at the edge of the forest and ran to hide from the police, taking the woman with him as leverage. However, when the police finally tracked them down hours later, they found the woman hysterical and in shock, and the man's burnt corpse on the ground. At first, the officers considered charging the ex-girlfriend, but once common sense set in, they realized there was no way this woman could have built any fire large enough, let alone restrained a man so much larger than her to kill him in such a manner. The woman never gave a statement on what she saw, as her mental state was deemed too erratic by doctors. She was taken to the nearby hospital, where she remains to this day. I jolted in my seat in fright when my phone buzzed, Esmina texting me again. "We were so lucky," her message read. "You have no idea." I forced my shaking fingers to type back, replying, "What do you mean?" Esmina replied after a long pause. "That night, I almost invited my boyfriend to come with us to the temple. He would have been burned alive." Full disclosure, Miriam wrote this story inspired by an urban legend that her cousins told her. But nevertheless, I love a good cautionary lore. The stories and myths shared about this place are what protects women in that area. If you are a man entering this hidden, secluded place with malicious intent, and you've heard what happened to other men, you would think twice before doing so. That is the power of stories. Chapter 2, The Neighborhood Girl, with Olivia Noel.
I'm Olivia Noel. I'm one half of the Girlish podcast, and I come from a very spiritual family. My parents are both Mexican, so our form of like Catholicism as a practice was really unique because whether my mom wants to admit it or not, our culture kind of teeters on the line with brujería, So there's a lot of connection with the spirits. My mom, like, always just told us her experiences with the supernatural and how even she feels conflicted being Catholic and accepting that there is, like, an afterlife of sorts that can still exist in this, like, in-between within our world.
This conflict within Olivia's mother presented itself one night in Olivia's childhood home.
I hated being there alone. It was really hard for me. I would avoid every chance that I could not to be there alone. So our home was in a two-story house, and my siblings' rooms were upstairs. So one night, she did her usual saying goodnight to my sisters. But for some reason, they were super afraid that night, and they kept telling my mom they were afraid that something was in the house. And my mom was just, like, you know, disbelieving it, just being pushing it off, just saying, you know, this isn't, you guys are being crazy. So she did her best to console them. And in the only way she knew how, she brought God into the conversation. And so her infamous words that she said to my sisters were, if you believe in ghosts, then you don't believe in God. And she proceeds to walk out of the room in the center of the hallway. Immediately after she told my sisters that, she sees what we end up calling the little girl, which my mom describes in detail. And this is one of the reasons why I fully believe in her. I fully believe in the words that she says, just the detail that she brings. Like, you can definitely tell this is something that she saw and she'll never unsee it. The little girl was in attire that was not fit for the 90s. It was a dress that could only be seen from the early century. So shoes that were, like, laced up, and a white dress with layers and a small pattern. And I always ask my mom if this ghost was in black or white, and she laughs and emphasizes that it was, in fact, not, like, a colored sort of apparition that she was seeing. But she knows, because of the light hair, that the girl was likely blonde. She describes it, her as having Shirley Temple curls with, like, longer hair and being around 7 or 8 years old. So that was, like, the story that, like, she told, and she got so scared. She, like, froze and then closed her eyes and just was like, God, please help me, help me, help me. And then when she opened it, she said it was gone. When I had talked with my mom about what she said before she saw it, because my mom said, if you believe in ghosts, you don't believe in God. And then she immediately sees a ghost. But then it only kind of made her feel more connected with God. And to me, that just didn't seem like it added up or it made sense. But to her, it was God's way of telling her that these apparitions exist. And to her, it felt like a connection to the spirit in a way where she wasn't afraid of it. She felt like, you know, she had young daughters at the time, and so she felt like almost, I think, a connection with it. Like, and I think it was a motherly thing that she empathized towards this child. But it is interesting talking about it with her today. No fear in her voice, like truly something that she feels like was a part of her.
Olivia ended up moving out of this home by the time she was 10 years old, but she would continue to revisit the home during summers to visit her dad, who still lived there. And every time she'd visit, she'd feel the same uneasiness and fear, despite never having had any solid reason to be afraid. Olivia's knowledge of the little girl's presence was still only through the stories of other people in her family, until one summer.
The last summer I visited there, I was 17. It was, like, right before going off to college. I went to go see my dad, and my cousins would come over all the time, and we'd spend a ton of time together because I never saw them because I was living in Florida. On the first afternoon that we got there for the summer, we pulled in. My cousin comes and greets us, and it's, like, really great. We're getting our stuff settled in the house, and we go upstairs, like, the scary upstairs, bright as day, like, normal day, really bright. Wasn't really thinking ghost stuff, but as soon as we got in the house, as soon as we went upstairs, I immediately like felt just like, I was like, oh, like it's really creepy being here. I just kind of got that feeling of again, of just like, I'm really, really creeped out. So I started talking with my cousin. My brother was also with us. And I just brought up like how weird I felt about how this house was very just off-putting. And as much as it is my home and I still see it as my home, I'm just always afraid of it. And I wish that I wasn't. I was talking to my cousin and she kind of reiterated the same thing as me, how she thinks the home is beautiful. It's this really old home, but there's just something about it that has always been off to her. And her dad had the same story as my mom. Her dad is the uncle of mine that saw the same apparition as my mom. And he was the one that was really freaked out about it. So growing up, she's always heard that it was a scary thing. But we both share that mutual fear of this home. So we were just kind of talking about the feeling that this house gave us. And in the midst of us talking, we just like out of nowhere, just hear like laughing, like a little child laughing. And it was the scariest thing I think I've ever gone through, just to randomly just hear this in the middle of talking about our fears of being in this home. And I'm getting chills right now because it was such a weird thing to happen, especially while we were talking about it. So we immediately looked at each other, and I have younger half siblings that live with my dad. So we all looked at each other and we were like, was that my siblings? Like, were my sisters here? Did they get home from school? And like, I looked at my cousin, I was like, no, like they're at school right now. They aren't here. And so like, I don't even know how long the laughing was or what it was. But like, as soon as we heard it, we like ran downstairs. We like ran out the house and we scoped the entire property just to see if maybe like my sister was just hiding in a room or if she was anywhere outside or if we had like any neighbors or something come over. Like, what was that noise? Because we clearly heard a child laughing and it was something that like really just like unnerved me. And it kind of solidified that something was going on because everyone had these little experiences and I never really had something. And once this happened, then it really kind of sat with me. And I was like, oh yeah, there is something here. And I wasn't excited about it, but I kind of was, where I was like, okay, like now I have the proof that I need. So after this experience happened, I didn't talk about it for years. And I don't even think I told my mom. It was just something that happened. And I brought it up with my mom. I told her I was going to be, you know, doing this. And I was asking her to tell me her story again, just so I can remember it. And I told her my experience that I had. And she was like, that is the craziest thing that you just said that, because my brother, he randomly snuck into the house one day, like years ago, just to like raid her refrigerator. And they were just in the house. It was nighttime. My mom wasn't there. Him and his wife were just in there raiding the refrigerator, just walking around because my parents left the doors unlocked. It was a really small town. No one was going to do anything. So they didn't like have any fear. So they said while they were in the middle of kind of going through like the house, they both heard a young child laughing and they ran out and left. So then that like really, it scared me and like solidified like, oh, that's crazy that like I wasn't the only one, and my cousin and my brother, like there's like depth to this, like it's happened multiple times. My half sibling had a really weird experience that like I just to this day thinks it's like such an odd coincidence. A part of me thinks it is a coincidence, but it's really, really weird. But she said she was sleeping in her room. And it was like normal. She slept with the TV on. And then she ended up waking up randomly. And there was a channel that was like static. And it was like really like freaking out the TV. And so she got tried to get the remote. And the remote was just like shuffling through the TV. And then the TV ended up landing on like an episode of a show that was literally like named Marisol, which is her name. And so like that's like crazy. And I believe her like fully. So this motif of this little girl existed within her home because my mom saw that every experience we had from there was, oh, it's the little girl. She's playing. She's doing something, we kind of validate that existence of this little girl, because not only has my mom seen her, but on the same street, we've had people see the same little girl in their home. So there's like this weird sort of lore in like this random stretch of South Carolina, like backwoods in the peach fields, like this little like row of houses who have some sort of experience with this possible little girl. And I know there's like a lot of lore of who she can be or what her history is. I've heard people say that maybe she passed away in one of the houses, or I've heard a story that she passed away by falling off of a horse carriage or something like that, driving down the street. I don't know, it felt real because so many people had so many stories, and she kind of took a life of her own within everyone's stories of her personality, who she was, whether she was good or bad. So my entire life was like, who is this little girl?
Because her childhood home is in a small town where street names have changed, it's been difficult for Olivia to find any historical proof of this girl's life. I asked Olivia if she or her family had ever consulted with a medium or tried to communicate with her directly.
So my mom is very strange when it comes to mediums, because she's like, oh, that's like not Catholic at all. We shouldn't engage in anything like that. But she's also like believes in it. And she also like rubs eggs on us whenever she thinks we have like the evil eye. So I'm like, you have to pick a lane here. But so she was always like, I think she really just didn't want to know more. So growing up, my family never did anything like that.
Seeing a ghost is almost like a Rorschach test. What you make of what you see can provide a peek into your psyche. Does a non-living girl staring you in the face scare you? Maybe because you don't feel ready for death. Or does seeing her inspire you because you're reminded how temporary life is?
There's like this existential question when it comes to seeing something that necessarily isn't alive anymore. Is what is the afterlife? What does the afterlife look like? If things can exist within this middle ground, what does that mean for me? And I think that's what scares a lot of people. It's definitely what scares me, and it's why I'm so afraid of it. Yeah, I think that's kind of why people have these weird sort of ideas of who she is. Like, some people may believe if she exists, then she's bad, she's scary. But for my mom, she empathized.
I was connected to Olivia because both of our podcasts were chosen for Radar for Podcasts, Spotify's new emerging podcaster growth program. Check out Olivia on her fantastic show, The Girlish Podcast.
If you guys are interested in any fun LGBT sort of pop culture content, Girlish is a show where my friend Gage and I chat about relevant news, pop culture news, anything relating to the LGBT community, our thoughts, and yeah.
Chapter 3, The Roadhouse Saloon, with Jim Harold. And now, we close the season finale with a story from Jim Harold. I remember hearing this story on Jim's podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire, years ago, and I still think about it often. It's no wonder it's his favorite as well. Strap in, because it is absolutely wild.
I've told this story so many times, but I'm going to tell it again because it is like something out of the Twilight Zone. It was our caller, T.I. She's from Wisconsin, or was in Wisconsin when this happened. She was spending some time at a camp. I guess she went every summer, I think, to this camp. And her and a friend from the camp, a male friend from the camp, went to see a band play about an hour away. The band played and they finished. And T.I. and her friend Bob went backstage and talked to them because they're both musicians, and they stayed there quite a while. So anyway, they leave. They had a good time. They've got about an hour to go back to camp. And they get partway there, and T.I. says, Bob, I hate to tell you, but I got to use the restroom. And Bob says, well, you could pull up a tree, but that's about our only option right now because we're way away from civilization, or at least, you know, almost an hour. So she said, that's okay, just drive fast. So they're driving along and they come up on this crossroads and there's this bar and the joint is jumping. There's neon lights, there's cars in the parking lot. I think that's weird, you know. Legal closing time's like 2 o'clock, but it's 3:30 in the morning, but we're not complaining. So they go in, Bob goes to the bar and gets at that point, I'm assuming a soft drink. T.I. goes to the bathroom, comes back and they're talking. And Bob says, you know, actually I'm thrilled to be here because I've heard about this mural on the wall that you see there. And it's an old West. The whole wall is an old West painting. And it has, you know, a cowboy and what they used to call in back in the day, a dance hall girl and a bartender and some guys playing cards. And it's pretty wild. And he said, you know, I'd heard about this. I'm an artist and always wanted to see it and so glad that we're seeing it. So anyway, something weird happens. There's this jukebox that's kind of like the old school bubbler Wurlitzer beautiful jukebox with real records in it. And this time I gather it was in the 90s or the early 2000s. That was pretty uncommon at that point, though now vinyl's back. And a guy puts on Let's Twist Again by Chubby Checker, that great oldie, even at that time. And he walks over to T.I., smiles. He has a mouthful of rotten teeth. And he asks T.I. to dance. And T.I. has a cane and she holds it up and says, I don't do much dancing. And she said she's so glad she had that because that was a very graceful way to be able to get out dancing with Mr. Toothless. So anyway, what happens is they're looking at this painting and they notice that the people in the painting are reflected in the actual people in the bar. And they're kind of blankly smiling. And they're just kind of, you know, kind of like almost spaced out a little bit. So the, quote, dance hall girl in the picture is standing over here. The guy's playing cards. They're not playing cards. They're playing pool. And the guy that's the bartender is not the bartender, but he's somewhere else. And the bartender in this, in the actual bar is this like big, burly kind of corn-fed kind of Iowa-looking kid with big muscles. This will come into play later in real life, not the one in the painting. So anyway, they just thought that was kind of weird. And they talk, and they just had a bizarre vibe about the place, but they were finishing their drinks. And all of a sudden, they noticed something they didn't notice at the beginning of the story. There is a set of double doors. If you ever watched an old Western movie and the villain comes in and he says, I want to see so-and-so, we're going to have a... we're going to have a duel or whatever. They go through these double swinging doors. Okay. Well, they had the double swinging doors in the painting, but they didn't notice before there's two columns of mist in these doors. And they're kind of ethereal and very transparent, very smoky. Then they notice one is taller than the other. And they look away and they start talking some more. And they look back and they look like they've developed like an old school Polaroid picture. They developed a little more, and it looks like one is taller and one is shorter. And they talk a little more, and they look back, and one looks like it's a man, and the other one looks like it's a woman. Talk some more, look back. One has a curly hair, a cane, and boots. T.I. has curly hair, a cane, and boots. The other is Bob. They decide they're developing into the picture itself. It looks like they said, let's get out of here. They stand up to go away. The people are like smiling and you can't see this is on video, but they're kind of beckoning back. Almost, they're not saying it, but they're kind of motioning like, come back, come back. And Bob and T.I. say, no way. And you know what? So they go out, they close the door. T.I. says everything went totally pitch black. Like it had never been opened. They turn around to look at the lot. There aren't multiple cars. There's one car, their car. So they leave. Now, that would be a pretty wild story. And that's where it would have ended with me, Sapphire, because I'm a chicken. But T.I. is a brave woman, and she decided to go back. She went back a few days later with a friend. Now, she went 8 o'clock at night. She wasn't, you know, she didn't wait till 3 o'clock in the morning. And she walks in. And the painting is on the wall, but there's no Bob and T.I. in the doors. She goes over the jukebox, but the odd thing is there is a jukebox. It is not a Wurlitzer bubbler old school jukebox, but at that time, modern jukebox with CDs. And by the way, no chubby chicker to be found. They go over to the bar and they talk to the bartender, who is a woman. And they say, T.I. says, I was in here the other night, you know, and it was interesting. She said there was this big kind of good looking burly kid behind the bartending bar. And she said, well, that's very odd. The only people who tend bar here are me and my elderly father. And with that, T.I. left and never came back. Now, there's two things you should know that even follow on to this story. This place exists. It really exists. Now, I can tell you up through 2019 it existed. I don't know what the status is now. Chad Lewis, the great researcher, he writes books on cryptozoology and so forth, actually went and took pictures, which he was kind enough to share with me. And I have on my YouTube channel, I have a video where I went up and met with T.I. and did about a 10-minute video with her retelling the story. And we include pictures of that in that video. And the thing is that I believed her when she told me over the phone. And this goes back, and this was over the phone, because this goes back to probably 2010 or something. But I believed her even more once I met her. She was in a respected profession, just a very friendly person, very warm person, great storyteller. But I believed her all along. So I have no idea what she walked into. It's wild to me that the place actually exists and people visited it. I'm not convinced of what causes these kind of things, but I'm convinced, A, that they're real, and B, it hints the fact that reality is far stranger than we realize. You know, I'm sitting here at my desk, pick up my iPhone. Okay, there's my iPhone. You know, I can touch it, I can tap it, I can feel it. If I play music, I can hear it. And you think that's all there is to reality, but I don't think that's the case. I think reality is multifaceted. I think it gets into questions of what time really is. It might get into questions of the multiverse. You know, I just think that here's the way that I put it, Sapphire. Here's my analogy. Okay, picture an old English manor, and you walk into the door, and you know there's a room with a library. And you walk up one of these old libraries that they have in these great old mansions with all the great leather-bound volumes. And you walk up, and the door is locked. But there's a keyhole, like the old-school keyholes, like the ones you can look through. And you can look through there, and you can see what it is. You can make out that it's like a private library, and it's very ornate, and there's some books in there. Well, that's what we see of life, I think. But we don't know how many books. We don't know what language they're written in. We don't know how many pages the books are. We don't even know the subject. So I think what we see in our daily lives is like what that person walking into that mansion is. We're just seeing a small sliver of reality. The other analogy I think of is like a record. You know, if a record has like 5 or 6 individual songs, it's all on the turntable. It's all there. You're in the one song, but, you know, if you bump it, it could like skip the arm and it could go to another song. That's kind of the way that I think of it, but similar idea. They all exist. When you're going around, all the songs are going around at the same time, but you're only accessing one. When I first started this, Sapphire, in 2005, God, I feel old. When I first started in 2005, I thought, I'll do this 6 months. It'll be great. I'll have all this stuff figured out. Oh, boy, was I wrong. Well, thanks, Sapphire. Thanks for having me on the show. I hope everybody gets to check out the shows. I think for listeners to your show, what they would be interested in the most is Jim Harold's Campfire, and you can find that on all the major podcast apps and at my site, jimharold.com. That's jimharold.com. I also have a YouTube channel that is nowhere near as popular as yours, but they could check that out at youtube.com/jimharold. And certainly, I love storytelling, and I love that there's so many people out there doing it these days. You do a fantastic job. And I just love sharing people's stories with the broader audience out there, and just privileged to be able to do this for quite a while. And I'm not done yet. I hope I've got at least another 15 years left in me. So very excited to be on the show. And Sapphire, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining me today. Stories with Sapphire will take a short break and return on April 12th. In the meantime, you can still catch me live twice a week on youtube.com/Sapphire Sindallo. If you have a story you'd like to hear on the show, send it to storieswithsapphire@gmail.com. And did you know that I offer tarot readings? You can schedule a session at storieswithsapphire.com. Salamat and good night. Stories with Sapphire is created and produced by me, Sapphire Sindallo. Music written by Sapphire Sindallo. Special thanks to Miriam, Olivia, and Jim. For more information on this episode, visit storieswithsapphire.com.